Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Steelers Football. I'm Bob Labriola, joined as always by Mike Pursuta of the DVE Morning Show. Mikey, it's time to preview those Cincinnati Bengals, those 3-3 Bengals. Let me ask you this. Are they the Bengals that won three of their first four, or are they the Bengals that have now lost two in a row?
I'm going to give you the Mike Tomlin answer to say they're the Bengals that have won three of their first six, or the Bengals that have lost three of their first six, if you want to look at it that way. I think capable players, interesting mix, not yet a team, not yet a consistent 60-minute effort kind of team, and still some issues. The most glaring of those would be on offense, third down, worst in the NFL, and interceptions. Andy Dalton has thrown more than just about everybody in the NFL. The negatives on defense are that this is not a team that turns the ball over, two interceptions. A lot of that going around at Paul Brown Stadium Sunday night. Great pass rush, 20 sacks. So you got to deal with that. They can do some damage, these Bengals, Lab, but they can also fall asleep for long stretches during games. Marvin Lewis doesn't think they're tough enough, doesn't think they have enough grit, enough get after it from down to down and series to series and quarter to quarter and game to game. So be interesting. Both teams trying to figure some stuff out, and both teams could really use a W.
Yeah, to put some numbers to some of the things you said, the Bengals are last in the NFL in third down conversions, 26.7%.
Say that again.
26.7%.
That is awful.
That is awful.
That's below the line.
Yes. Andy Dalton has thrown 9 interceptions. 3 of them have been returned for touchdowns.
Braden Whedon has thrown 10.
Yes.
That's the high watermark for INTs.
Yeah, it's, you know, Andy Dalton.
He's hanging out with Tony Romo at 9 interceptions.
I heard Andy Dalton described as a quarterback who knows just enough to be dangerous, which means he's dangerous to himself in terms of, yeah, I think I can get the ball in there. Yeah, I think I can. Yeah, I think A.J. Green is going to make this play. More often than not, he's right about that. That is one really good player. But Andy Dalton is, you know, he only threw 9 interceptions in 516 attempts last year. 13 interceptions in 513 attempts last year. He has 9 already this year. So, yeah, they are a turnover machine. They've also lost 5 fumbles. So that's 14 turnovers. But, you know, on the flip side, Andy Dalton has thrown 12 touchdown passes. So he only had 20 all season last year. So, I mean, he's much more of a high wire act this year. Now, I don't know if that's a good thing on net or a bad thing. You know, the Bengals were 9-7 last year. They're muddling along at 500 this year with a lot of other teams. The Steelers wish they were muddling along at 500. So this is going to be one of those things where, you know, what happens when the quarterback who can't stop throwing interceptions run into a defense that has a secondary that can't catch?
I mean, incomplete after they drop it.
You know,
I see where you're going with it.
What happens?
The irresistible object versus the movable force.
Yes.
How does it make for some good TV on Football Night in America? Somebody's going to make a play. It's either going to be Andy Dalton and A.J. Green, or it's going to be Keenan Ivory Lewis, or maybe Ike Taylor. At crunch time, somebody's going to step up and make a play that tilts this thing. But I anticipate a very close game, kind of a back-and-forth game, and another one of those games that comes down to last score, last stop.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, based on what we've seen lately, I'd rather take my chances with Ben having the ball last than having to rely on that defense. But, you know, who knows? The Steelers are 10-2 all-time at Paul Brown Stadium, a place that, I don't know, I love this trip.
Is that considered an addition to their road record? That 10-12 or 10-2 record?
Can you add it into the home record?
I mean, a lot of black and gold in the ballpark, yeah. Green seats there at Paul Brown Stadium.
And you and I have talked about this often, the Escaloosa, as it's called. For and fans who have never been to Paul Brown Stadium, there is an escalator, a really long, high escalator that takes fans up into the upper reaches of Paul Brown Stadium in the one end zone. And
it's where the rotunda is at Heinz Field next to the scoreboard.
Okay.
In the scoreboard end.
Right.
So it would basically come from that plaza up to the upper deck. So it's prominent.
You can't miss it. And naturally, in the early part of the game, the escalator is running up because it's always taking fans to their seats. The thing is when do they turn it around so that it can take fans from their seats? When you see that
– usually early third quarter.
Yeah, early to mid-third quarter, when you start to see it being populated by fans on the way down, that is when it has been dubbed the Escaloosa by those smart Alex in the Cincinnati media.
Oh, is that from their end?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, Butch Hobson told me that.
Okay. I really wish. I was going to ask you who among us came up with
that. That's theirs.
I wish I had.
I want bingo. I'm with you on that. Yeah, it really annoys me when they say the funny things. I prefer it to be me. But, yeah, so, you know, one of the things the Steelers are going to have to contend with, though, this Bengals defense, you know, you and I argued about this a little bit on Agree to Disagree this week. The defensive lines. I believe that this is a better defensive line than the Philadelphia Eagles. You disagreed with me, but let's just say that either of them, both of them, pose serious challenges, maybe in different ways a little bit.
And hopefully they are similar because the Steelers, if I'm remembering right, ran the ball pretty well against
Philadelphia. Over 4 yards a carry. No sacks, too.
So, but, you know, factor those two things in, I think they win the game again. It's an interesting mix, and Max Starks gave a dissertation the other day on how to block linemen that are trying to get their hands up and get in the lane and bat the ball. That's been a real emphasis lately for Marvin Lewis. Hopefully everybody was paying attention, and hopefully that dissertation has been given to someone other than the media. Not that I didn't appreciate it. It was fascinating stuff. But hopefully the Steelers can establish that run. That slows down the rush a little bit. And hopefully they don't forget to throw the ball to Rashard Mendenhall in the flat if he plays. Those screen passes tend to be effective against a heavy pass rush as well.
You know, Marvin Lewis's emphasis aside here, I was just scanning the statistics. All this jumping up of the linemen, there's only two of them. One, and they each have one, who have batted down a pass. Geno Atkins has one, and Michael Johnson has one. So
yeah, one of them resulted in an interception against the Browns, though. It's a relatively new development.
Oh, okay. New emphasis for Marvin.
What I'm told, yeah.
Well, let's see how that works out for them.
Our old buddy Solomon Wilcots was doing the game last week, and he said they're coaching them on a three-step drop to jump and get your hands up.
Well, and I hope that, you know, rather than continue to rush the passer, they would all stop and jump up because, I don't know, leaving your feet on defense to me is very, very rarely ever the right way to play something.
I thought that too, but I asked Starks about that, and he said everybody does it.
Well, yeah, when you get stuffed, you know, they'll say, okay, well, since you can't get to the passer, put your hands up.
Yeah.
But if you can get to the passer and you're worried about jumping, to me, that's wasted. You should be continuing to travel towards him instead of stopping to jump vertical.
Sure. I even get if you get stuffed, get your hands up, yes, but don't leave your feet because then if the lineman's smart, he finishes you off. And then you're not in a position to chase the plane. You never know what happens when you chase.
Or, you know, the other thing that you see a lot of times is you may think he's throwing it, but if he doesn't and holds on to the ball, you're up in the air.
Ducking, see you later.
Right. So, I don't know. I'm not a really big fan of that.
But I think jumping's for basketball.
Yeah. Speaking of jumping, A.J. Green can do some of that down the field if and when it is necessary. And, I don't know. He's one of those guys to me. You know, receivers always say they're always open. Well, he legitimately is always open because even when there are one or two guys around him vertically, he can leave them in the dust.
They certainly seem to think so. I'm trying to think, what does he do? He can catch the back shoulder sideline. He can catch the fade in the red zone. He can go across the middle. He can catch the deep ball. That's at least a four-trick pony. I don't know if I'm leaving anything out.
Well, I mean, he can also catch the, hey, AJ, can you make a play for me? Because I don't know where else to go with the ball. You know, he's, to me, he can erase a lot of bad throws. And, again, to putting it up down the field to let AJ Green make a play is a pretty solid decision in my book pretty much every time. You know, we'll see how the Steelers combat this. I think that trying to cover him man-to-man is foolish. You know, we'll see what Dick LeBeau has cooked up for Sunday.
Probably the bracketing thing would make a lot of sense. And we'll see what Dick LeBeau has cooked up if he gets Lamar Woodley and James Harrison on the field together for more than a couple of minutes.
Yeah, and, you know, what I want to see, too, is how the opponent reacts to that. Because, you know, a lot of times, I think when we saw this, James Harrison's first game back was Philadelphia. I thought the Eagles showed a lot of, maybe a little too much respect for a guy who had not played at all. No spring football OTAs, no training camp, no preseason. None of that stuff, really only practiced successive days the week leading up to that Philadelphia game. And, you know, I thought that the Eagles were somewhat deferential to James Harrison and, you know, thought that he was going to be a guy, play like a guy who had not missed all of that time.
Maybe they just know their left tackle better than we do.
Maybe. But see, so I'm interested to see how, you know, Marvin Lewis handles this because, again, I just don't think that these guys coming off injuries and dealing with a lot of the things they've been dealing with aren't necessarily the guys you're thinking you're going to be seeing based on the highlights that are on TV. So, you know, who knows? Maybe Marvin Lewis wants to challenge him and says, hey, you know what, James Harrison, I haven't really seen much from you so far this season. I'm going to leave my left tackle on you one-on-one all day.
Maybe Marvin knows linebackers better than we do.
Maybe Marvin knows linebackers. Right. So that's to me what's going to be a little bit interesting.
Yeah, that's a very I think you hit onto something there because from what I saw the Bengals against Cleveland, they like that four wide look and a running back, not necessarily four wide receivers, but Gresham out away from the line.
Kind of like the Steelers do.
And you know what? Heath. There's some pass rush opportunities there if you want to play it that way, depending on how much you trust your running back. As we've been taught in Backs on Backers, that the backer should win that showdown. So let's see if James Harrison and Lamar Woodley can get some wins.
Yeah, and do the Bengals believe that they can handle one of them with a running back or one of them with a tight end? You know, those are the things that, you know, could be interesting. Is this must win? I mean, that's a little ridiculous based in a conference where only two teams have winning records at this point. But, I mean, the Steelers can't continue to be, you know, mucking and slopping around in this early part of the schedule. I mean, 2-4 would just, to me, would be awful.
That was the word that Ben Roethlisberger used yesterday, that very word.
Awful.
It would be awful. It would be terrible. I asked him that question you just raised, and he said it's never make or break until you're in the playoffs, and then you either win or go home. And I assume the same logic would apply to, you know, if you lose this game and you're mathematically eliminated type of thing. And, yeah, 2-4, a generic 2-4, you could recover from that. But you got to wonder how many psychological blows this team can absorb. It's not used to losing. It's not comfortable losing. And you have so many things seemingly working in your favor. Now you're going to Paul Brown Stadium where you're 10-2. You're getting your two linebackers back, and if they last the whole game, that'll be the first time all year that that's happened. You haven't won a road game all season, so bound and determined to do that. Three AFC losses, bound and determined to stop that. First AFC North game, those are holy days around here. You know, that's those games mean everything to these guys. And the words of Brett Kiesel yesterday, we all understand the importance of this game on the rest of our season. So you throw all that on the one side and you still can't win? I'm going to go Churchill on you. If not now, when?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's time. It's not mathematically time, but it's time. Got to put a performance together. Got to go on the road and win a football game against a good team, and then go, okay, got through that. We're going to be all right. Because you don't want to go the other place.
Very well said, and we're going to leave it on that note. For Mike Prisuta, I'm Bob Labriola. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on Monday and tell you whether he was right or not.